Well, on this episode of MSU Today, we're going to talk about progress involved in the implementation of the student success theme of the MSU 2030 strategic plan. We're going to do that with, of course, our Vice President for Strategic Initiatives, Bill Beekman, who one of his main responsibilities is to oversee implementation of the plan. And joining us in a few minutes will be Mark Largent, the Vice Provost and Dean of Undergraduate Studies here at Michigan State University, and who I like to call just the guru of student success. So, Mark, great to have you back on the program, and Bill, take it away.
Well, thanks so much, Russ, and yes, it's very exciting to have Mark Largent with us today. Mark has done a just extraordinary job of thinking through the from beginning to end and all points in between how our students' lives are impacted when they come here to Michigan State, what opportunities we can provide them, and how we can make sure that they have a successful Spartan undergraduate experience. And there are literally thousands of behind-the-scenes steps to that process. And Mark, as the Dean of Undergraduate Studies, is responsible maybe for not every single one of them, but for many, many of them, and then keeping track of making sure that they all fit together to provide an optimal student experience. But before we dive into the nuts and bolts of strategic planning and the work, Mark, that you've done, tell us a little bit about your role. What is a Dean of Undergraduate Studies? What are you responsible for?
So I work in the Vice Provost's office and for undergraduate education. My job is to help coordinate across the colleges and in engagement with our colleagues in student life, the experience that the typical undergraduate at Michigan State has. You know, the real work that's done is done in the residence halls, and it's done in the colleges and in the departments and in the classrooms. But you want to think about how all of that work aggregates up to a consistent and coherent experience for students, so that you can think about if you come to Michigan State as a high energy physics major or as a theater major or in our supply chain management in one of the residential colleges or in one of the colleges like Broad or nursing that has a secondary admissions process, you know, very different pathways within the undergraduate experience. But there should be something that ties it together, that sort of holds together what is a Spartan undergraduate experience across all of these very different students following all these very different lines. And if you don't have that, you end up with gaps and cracks that students fall through, places in which students don't get the services that are available to them, or they don't realize the opportunities that could be available to them. So my job is to really try to optimize the really great work that's being done in the student life area of the university, and especially in the colleges and in the departments.
So when we think about strategic planning and in our university Vision 2030 strategic plan, student success is the first of six theme areas, and the authors of the plan were very intentional in the way that they ordered the theme areas, with student success being first, and acknowledging that that's really our highest priority item as a public university. And so your role is really at the front and center of that work, and one of the benchmarks or metrics that we focused on is the six-year graduation rate. Mm-hmm. Now, some might wonder, why 6 years? And my understanding is that that's to be consistent with some federal benchmarking. Is that the case?
Yeah, so I think we all think of an undergraduate experience as a four-year experience, and that really is the goal. About half of the students who start here straight out of high school will finish their degree within 4 years. The federal government uses 150% of the normal time as the measurement period. So for an associate's degree, it's 3 years, and for a bachelor's degree, it's 6 years. So our six-year graduation rate is what's federally reported and what's sort of widely discussed. So if you go on Google and look up any college or university, on the sidebar, it brings up a set of metrics about the school, and it'll have their graduation rate. That's a six-year graduation rate. Most students graduate in the range of 4 to 5 years. And of course, you know, if you go one semester over, it's now the fifth year. So they would say it's a 5 years if you go for 4 full years, then you come back that fall. Over the course of the last 8 years, as we've put increased attention on student success at MSU, we've reduced our time to degree from, on average, 4.33 years to 3.96 years. So we're under that four-year mark right now, which means that students are graduating a full semester earlier, on average, across the board at MSU, which saves them thousands and thousands of dollars. Half a year at MSU for room, board, and tuition is about $15,000. So
yeah, that's pretty extraordinary. When we think about graduation rates, it's always been fascinating to me as you've walked me through this model from time to time. We think about the transition from being a freshman or a first-year student to a second-year student, a second year to a third year, a third year to a fourth year. And could you talk about where the critical points are in that process, where students tend to struggle, and how you're focusing on addressing those points of struggle that you've identified and trying to make sure that our students can sort of get over those hurdles, which then allows them to graduate?
Yeah, so transitions are always the point of vulnerability. So transitioning out of high school and into college over the course of that spring and summer. And one thing that we learned from COVID was the critical importance of that senior year as a transitionary year for students coming in. And so there's a momentum and a trajectory that students have when they get to the university. And we can start shaping that by how we recruit students, because we're recruiting students in their junior year, and as we're recruiting them, the messaging that we give about what the university is and how the university operates is critically important, because it sets notions that the students have about how things ought to work. And so we've been working a great deal more with admissions to help them articulate, this is what the student experience at MSU is like, which we know will make them more successful in recruiting students. But it also makes the students more successful when they get here, because they have a mindset that's in line with what the university's functions actually are. So we're trying to align the university to the students, and then in some ways, through the process of socializing them into the university, align them with the things that we know will help them to be successful. Orientation is a critical process. Move in. So we've, we used to have Welcome Week. That for a variety of reasons, and Bill, you were there for all those decisions, we decided Welcome Week wasn't organized in the best way. It in some ways was a bit of a party, and in some ways didn't set students up to be really successful. So we've got a fall welcome now, which is much more programmed for students. So they come in, we help them with move in, and there's a set of things to sort of begin to get them into the rhythm of the school year right away. And so fall welcome becomes a critical part of that.
Yeah, it's interesting with the welcome week that many of my generation experienced. You sort of got your dorm key and engaged in a week of partying, and we took that and really compressed it into what for a time we called Welcome Weekend.
Yep.
And now over the last several years, we've sort of been slowly almost growing it again, mm-hmm. but growing it with very intentional programming yep. that supports our students. So it's certainly still opportunity to meet new friends and engage in fun yes. activity, but much, much more significant programming throughout those several days.
Yeah, that's been because of a build-out in student life. And that's been a really important part of what's happened. When Sam Stanley was president, he made the decision that we would take auxiliary services and student affairs and combine them into the unit that's now SLE. And student life is responsible for a great deal of the college experience. So students really, when they think about college, they their attention is first drawn to the classes and to the majors, the curriculum itself, which is good because that is the core of the university. But students will spend 15% of their waking hours in class, just 15%. They'll spend 85% of their time not in class but in college. And that college experience, again, the COVID learning that we got was that the cultural engagement that students have with each other, social engagement, this college experience is so very, very critical to students really coming here and learning and thriving and graduating successfully. So as we've had a build out in student life, we're trying very hard to create as many opportunities as possible for the academic side of campus and the student affairs side of campus to be really arm in arm with each other. And that's one of the things that I think makes MSU very different from other Big Ten universities, other large regional universities. I spent a lot of time with my colleagues at other Big Tens and at regionals. And most of them, the academic side of campus and the student affairs side of campus, they sort of stand back to back. They face opposite directions. And they have sort of very different notions about their roles with students. At MSU, and I think part of this is because of some longtime leadership from folks like Vinnie Gore and really strong leaders like Dr. Janine Royal, they see academic and social success as intricately bound together, that they're not separatable. And so we don't stand back to back. We stand very much shoulder to shoulder. So in the neighborhood engagement centers, there is social, physical, mental health, and academic support services, and they're all together in these five areas on campus where students can go. And it isn't just, I'm going there to be tutored in math. It's a social space in which students are supported to really learn and thrive. It makes MSU very different because we don't have that student affairs, academic affairs split. Like we do recognize ourselves as part of the same mission. Two different ones.
No, as a former athletic director, I sometimes find myself talking too much in sports analogies. But I think this is a perfect example of where even if you have a number of stars on a team, if they don't work together as a team, you really struggle. And what you're describing is some really extraordinary teamwork, which is made all the more challenging by just the massive size of our institution. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when those components can be coordinated and seamlessly working with each other, the student experience becomes something very, very different. So thinking about how we admit students, when students come to Michigan State and they sign up for classes, they select a major or at least a preference at some level. Students come to us in various sort of stages of preparedness. You have a really, at least from my perspective, fascinating philosophy that you've been sort of ingraining in the culture of our institution and what you do. Thoughts on how a university and its students interact with each other and how a university really needs to be a student-facing organization rather than plugging students into the mold of the university.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I appreciate the compliments to the work that we're doing collectively. And I'm happy to be in the role of a spokesperson and provide voice for it. Fact of the matter is, you know, I'm a historian of science. Like, if you want to know about late 19th century evolutionary theory or the history of eugenics, I am your man. I'm an authority in that space. But because of the peculiar way in which universities function and the privileges that are given to tenure system faculty, I found myself in this role as vice provost and dean of undergraduate education. But I have working with me dozens of people who have actual PhDs in this, who have spent their lives and careers really focusing on this. And so what I can give voice to is what I've learned from them and what they've pressed. And the thing that they universally subscribe to is a notion of the really caustic impact of a deficit mindset. The idea that if you look at students or employees for what they're not, rather than what their strengths are, that you'll inevitably find that that people won't be called to perform at their best. People won't be operating in systems that are designed to help them leverage their strengths. And instead, you end up with a situation where people who happen to have the kind of experiences and preparation and the type of social and cultural experiences are privileged when they get to an institution like this. And if we are truly a land-grant university that prides itself in being accessible and providing opportunity for the people who have access to the institution, then we have to abandon these deficit mindsets. And we have to say, we want a very diverse college campus that the people who come to it bring very different backgrounds. So we can't privilege some backgrounds over others. We have to create an environment that is ecumenical, that is open and encouraging for all of the people who we invite to campus. Now, of course, there are certain necessary precursors that a student must have before they come here, certain skills and certain skills they must master, certain knowledge they must acquire. But no one comes here fully prepared, right? There's a great quote from a former president of Brown who talks about Ivy League students, and he says, Ivy League students are impervious to failure or learning. And he's like, you know, they're on a trajectory. And he said, there's very little that I can do to them or for them to help or prevent them from succeeding. That's not Michigan State, right? Michigan State is a space in which people are invited from a broad variety of backgrounds to come here and leave better than they got here. So we can't adopt a deficit mindset. So the shift that the colleagues have helped me learn about and that I've worked hard to try to articulate with them is what we call an institutional deficit model. And so the old model is a student deficit model. Student deficit models are ones in which we think about the institution and its curriculum are perfect. And students need to fit that, as you said, mold, right? They need to be the square peg in the square hole. And if they're not, then we need to fix them. So we have remedial classes, and we have summer bridge programs, and we have tutoring, and we have a whole variety of different things that are designed to turn those round pegs into square pegs so they can fit into our square holes. And that's the higher education system that I think anybody over 40 experienced, probably anybody over 30 experienced, one in which you were invited to come to campus and with the expectation that some of you would struggle and not succeed. So many of us know this line where, you know, you at orientation, you're told, look at the person to your left, look at the person to your right. Like one of you will not graduate. And nationwide, that's true. More than a third of students who start college degrees don't finish. Where I went, I remember the president saying, look at the person on your left, look at the person on your right, one of you will graduate. And it was true. At that time, the school had a 36% graduation rate. And it was almost like said it like it was something to be proud of. Like, we're so rigorous that only one or two of you out of three will be successful. And I mean, could you imagine sitting in your doctor's office in the waiting room and the doctor comes out and says, look at the person to your left, look at the person to your right. Like, one of you won't survive this visit. I mean, it's crazy. It's a very odd way of functioning. And it's a very old system of higher ed that is student deficit. If we shift to an institution deficit model in which we say, these are our students, we invited them to apply, we accepted them and we encouraged them to come, they came here, now it's our responsibility to serve their needs, to allow them to learn, thrive, and graduate. That shift, my predecessor, Sekar Shivukula, really helped push that shift hard. He was a brilliant theoretical physicist who's now at the UC Santa Barbara, or excuse me, UC San Diego. And I was in the room the first time he said it to a group of people. It was at a new faculty orientation for the College of Natural Science. And he said to everybody in the room, we believe every student that we admit has the capacity to learn, thrive, and graduate. And those of us around the table were like, yeah, you have to believe that, right? And he came over to the table afterwards and he said, was that too much? Do we like really believe that? Because the fact of the matter is we grew up in a system that didn't believe that, right. That believed that some of us should not graduate. That's not our system. We want to design a university in which every student who comes here is supported in ways that allow them to learn, thrive, and graduate. So shifting that model from a student deficit model to an institution deficit model gives us the ability then to say at the admissions process, not is this student good enough to come to MSU? But instead, we look at the student and we say, given what we know about this student and what they want to accomplish, is MSU good enough to support them to learn, thrive, and graduate? And if MSU isn't, then we shouldn't admit them. But if we did, we're responsible to support them in ways that help them.
And in many ways, that's the magic of MSU, that we have when we look statistically at the skills, experience, what our students come to us with, and then we look at the sort of on the other side of the black box, how we graduate them and send them out into the world, statistically, what happens in that black box of the university is more successful here than most anywhere else.
Yeah. The way I've heard it explained to me is our students, if they went to all of the other universities in the country, would graduate 10 percentage points lower than they graduate from here.
That is a far more eloquent way to say it than I did. Thank you.
Teresa Woodruff described it that way once. I'm like, ooh, that's way better. I'm going to steal that. So, yeah, that we punch 10 percentage points above our weight. That the students who come here graduate roughly a third more often than they would. We have a third less attrition than we ought to have. So why and how do we do that? Well, a big part of it is the number of colleges that we have. Most institutions like us have 6 or 7 colleges. We have 14 degree-granting undergraduate colleges. And the colleges are so critically important to this because every college has its own culture. They have very different styles, very different social and intellectual cultures. So a student who comes here and is given an opportunity to explore and figure out, like, what is it that serves my passions? What is it that will help me fulfill what I'm coming to believe is my purpose in life? And then time to explore and decide where that is. 3/4 of the students who come to MSU and graduate have changed their major at least once, which is a stunning figure when you think about it.
It really is. And you're right. I recently completed a set of conversations where, as the vice president for strategic initiatives, I sat down with every dean of every degree-granting college and had a conversation about strategic planning, where their planning was headed, how their planning coordinated with our university planning. And it was so much fun because you walked in to a conversation having read that college's strategic plan, and the plan's just sort of the culture of the college emanated through the plan.
Yeah.
The James Madison strategic plan was just very Madisonian. The engineering plan felt very engineering. Yeah. And so you saw the cultures of these very different colleges. And so, yes, our students are given this opportunity to experience very different opportunities, different not only different majors, but different cultures and sort of ways of looking at the world in a very, very interesting way. So when a student decides to change their major, as many of our students do, and certainly it's hard to expect an 18-year-old to know exactly what they want to do for the next 50 years. Mm-hmm. That the common logic would be, at least of the parent who may be paying the tuition bill, oh no,
yeah,
we're into extra semesters.
Yep.
Got my child who wanted to be an X is now wants to be a Y, and now they've got to sort of start over, if you will.
Right.
How do we grapple with that and try and facilitate that inevitable change in student thinking without unduly elongating the college experience?
Yeah, and the longer it is, we know, the more likely it is that a student will leave without their degree. So at MSU, if you don't change your major after you hit your junior year, on average, no matter how many times you changed it during your first and second year, there is no increased time to degree or cost of degree. That is, we've got a structure and a functional system at the university such that students are not disincentivized to explore. If you come back for your junior year, you have about a 95% graduation rate. So that's Harvard's graduation rate. The question is, what happens in those first 2 years? And for us, allowing a student to explore and develop their purposes and passions without penalizing them in that exploratory process. Now, some students find that as they get closer to their junior year, if they change their major, they do feel some added time to degree. The students who are pinched in that way are typically the students who come in here with a very firm belief in what they want to do, and after 12 or 24 months realize that maybe that's not what they want to do. So we tend to think about three different groups of students. We think about the undecided student. I was like, I don't really know. I know I should go to college. I know I want to go to college. I want to have a college experience, but I'm not sure what I want to do. The second group are the underdecided. I think I want to do this. I want to go into the healing arts, right, into health care in some way. Or I'm really interested in something mathematical. So maybe actuarial science or maybe accounting or maybe something in engineering, right? And so those are underdecided. And then we have what we call overdecided students, students who at 17 are like, this is what I want to do. I want to be a lawyer. I want to go into business. And then they get here and they realize, like, we don't have a business major. We have 30 majors that lead to careers in business, and they're spread across 5 different colleges. So when those students who come in with this very overdecided view at a university this large, they find themselves sort of struggling because they're like, oh, business, so that must mean I want management. Oh, actually, I don't really want management. I like data analytics. Or I don't really want management. I really want to do PR. Or I'm actually an economics person. I want to do econ or ag econ. These are all in different colleges. They're radically different things. And a student who comes in and sticks with, like, I want to do business management. Oh, wait a minute. No, I don't actually want to do business management. Those are the ones who we see may have an added semester. So what we try hard to do in that admissions process and when the students first come in is tell them, like, it's okay. Slow down. Explore. We're not going to penalize you for this. You don't have to know exactly what you want to do through the course of your undergraduate career, much less through the course of your professional career, right now. We want you exploring. And so that exploration then leverages the tremendous diversity that we have across colleges. A third of our students change colleges. 3/4 of our students change their majors. Of the students who graduate, that's good news. And I think that that's really important. And it allows the colleges to be their robust selves and not fall into alignment with a common vision with other colleges or with the university. And students get that opportunity to figure out, like, no, I'm not a business person. I'm actually really a social science person. I want to be an econ. Or I'm not really an engineer. It turns out I'm really a comm arts person. Like, what I really want to do is video game design, not computer science, and understanding those differences. So it requires us to think about students in ways that we didn't think as students. And that shift has been a big one for us collectively.
Right. No, the world has certainly evolved in some wonderful ways in higher education and how we think about students and student success. And I remember a number of years ago, I was teaching a class in the law school, and very small class in healthcare finance. I think there were 10 or 12 students. And I would always start the semester by saying, if I do my job and you do your job, everybody should get an A. Mm-hmm. And they all sort of looked at me like I had 3 heads, because that isn't really the law school culture.
Yeah.
Everything's graded on a curve, and somebody is first and somebody is last. And I think over time, we've evolved into thinking, how do we collectively beat the system, not how do we beat each other?
Yeah. The shift away from a competitive model where people are competing against each other to where as a group we're competing. And the reality is what we're asking students to do is really hard, right? We're asking them to make social, emotional, and physical transitions at a really vulnerable time in their lives. And for the students that we're working with now, they've all been so, in some cases, harmed, in some cases, their directions pointed off in another way because of COVID, right? There's a tremendous degree of vulnerability. And so you've got a whole group of people who you're asking to do really, really hard things. And you're asking them to master really complex, sophisticated course material. Like, that in and of itself is an accomplishment. There's no reason we can't work collectively to do it. There doesn't need to be some hierarchy amongst us. And so that's, again, it's also well aligned with our land grant ethos, right? This notion that you're not going to college to better yourself. You're going to college to better yourself so that you can improve your family's lot, so that you can support your community. I mean, the job of land-grant universities is to produce good citizens and good employees. Yes. And so that's a collectivist action. It's not an individual sort of student against student kind of thing.
No, I've always, when I talk to students, I always tell them that my definition of a Spartan is a person that makes their corner of the world a better place, whatever that might be. Mark, in your work in undergraduate education, you're a massive assist leader in helping, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of students find ways to make their world a better place. And so you and your team just do really extraordinary work. And I will, as a final question, you've been in this role for a number of years. When you came into it, I suspect you anticipated some of what you would encounter and probably have had some surprises along the way. What are the one or two surprises or interesting lessons learned that you've had in this really sort of critical but a bit behind-the-scenes role in undergraduate education?
So I've been in the job for 5.5 years. I've had 7 presidents and 5 provosts.
Oh, my goodness.
Didn't expect that. Didn't think that because I had taken the job at a time when we'd had really consistent leadership. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the prior 15 years that I'd been at MSU, I'd seen 1 president and 2 provosts.
Yes.
I couldn't imagine a university that's had the kind of leadership transitions that we've had. I was at University of Michigan a few weeks ago. They're beginning to do the kind of work that we've been doing now for 6 or 7 years, and they're trying to craft an undergraduate vision for student success. And so as I discussed what we'd accomplished over the last 8 years, which has been really impressive. As a community, we should be very, very proud of ourselves. We've raised our graduation rates from 77% to 82%. We have raised our admission. We were admitting about 65% of the people who applied. We're now admitting about 83% of the people who've applied. So we've completely bucked the trend of raise your graduation rate by lowering your admission rate, right?
Yes.
Only select those students who are easy for you to graduate. We've done the opposite. We've raised our graduation rate and we've raised our admission rate simultaneously. There's no institution in the Big Ten, and there's no institution in the state of Michigan that has both a higher graduation rate and a higher acceptance rate. Like, that's great, right?
Yeah.
And so they said, how in the world did you do that through 7 presidents and 5 provosts? I said, because every time you get this turnover, you get an opportunity to sort of reset the bar. And so when Sam Stanley came in, we started pitching the institution deficit model idea and the notion that student success should be centered. It's our core business function, and that if students are doing really well here, the institution is going to do really well. And so he adopted that. You see it embedded. And remember that thing that I told you Sekar Shivukula said nervously 8 years ago? Do we really believe every student can learn that comes here should learn, thrive, and graduate? And by the time Sam Stanley left, that was a common phrase that he just kept saying. And it's embedded in the strategic plan.
Yes.
And Teresa, when she came, Teresa Woodruff, when she came from Northwestern here, she very quickly adopted and accelerated this work, first as provost and then as interim president. And so these leadership turnovers that we've had have actually been surprisingly helpful for us in being able to make change happen more quickly. And I think the campus has wanted this, right? We've had this urge to really actualize our land-grant ethos. And so I think the rapid turnover in leadership that we've had has given us the opportunity for leadership to catch up with the rest of campus and try and all get on the same page, which is what the implementation of the strategic plan is intended to do, right? From top to bottom, from the east side of campus to the west, from Flint to Grand Rapids into the UP, like this is who we are and what we do. The idea is that we're all singing from a similar songbook now.
Well, Mark, every time we talk and you talk so eloquently about undergraduate education, the undergraduate experience and what makes Michigan State special, it just gets me excited and invigorated. And I'm sure our listeners have that same feeling, having had the opportunity to hear your important perspective and what drives so much of the culture here at Michigan State. So thank you so much for joining us today, and go forth and continue to do this extraordinary work in support of Michigan State University and its students.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Russ.
That's Mark Largent, Michigan State University's Vice Provost and Dean of Undergraduate Studies. He was talking with Bill Beekman, our Vice President for Strategic Initiatives, about the arguably most important theme in MSU 2030 Strategic Plan, the Student Success Pillar. Much more online, strategicplan.msu.edu. And I'm Russ White. This is MSU Today.